Good morning, my television and radio audience. I have a special guest that's going to be with us today. The name of this show is The 19 Symptoms of Low Self-Esteem. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you these symptoms. And for those of you, keep notes. And if anything applies, you know, put it down so we can talk about it later. Well, anyway, here are the 19 symptoms. Okay, here they are. Number one, make negative I am statements. Number two, fears new experiences and changes, not trusting self or others. Number three, exaggerated response to defeats or disappointments, wants to be perfect and sees themselves as far from perfect. Number four, frequent boasting, exaggerating successes to cover up for feelings of inadequacy. Number five, strong need for approval, eager to please and in need of constant support. Number six, neglect physical appearance to an extreme degree, also has poor eye contact. Number seven, strong need for material possessions. Number eight, reluctant to express their own ideas and do not believe in themselves. Number nine, lack of accountability, feeling hopelessness. Number 10, lack of energy, passive, see small tasks as being very large and is intimidated by them. Number 11, low level of self-awareness and uses a lot of energy in maintaining a false image. Number 12, excessive anxiety. Number 13, overly sensitive to criticism. Number 14, does not know how to build a supportive network. Number 15, frequent psychosomatic complaints. Number 16, overly critical of others. Number 17, habitually puts down others. Number 18, focus on the past. Number 19, last but not least, excessive apologizing. Lots of negative self-talk. Okay. Now, Jeff, I want you to sort of reiterate on a few of these. Pick whichever one. By the way, people, Jeff, why don't you give them a little information about yourself.
Sure. Thanks for having me on the show, first of all. And it's a pleasure to be here, and I hope that I can help those that are living with low self-esteem. So first of all, as you asked, I'd like to tell a little bit about myself. While I was in the throes of my mental illness, which was back in 2001, I was diagnosed with bipolar 1. And at the time, I was transformed from a millionaire in the executive industry in Manhattan's garment district to then becoming homeless and penniless because of this manic episode. And I think of, well, I know that I'm actually a living proof that recovery is possible, but you need to understand, or at least I needed to understand, that treatment, which I call or refer to it kind of like treat me, not them, and recovery do go hand in hand, that you, or that I should say I, again, have had to understand the definition of recovery through going to school and that process.
Very good. Now, I want to talk a little bit about your credentials. You are a certified psychosocial rehab practitioner. Is this correct?
Yes. That, and I've had actually a lot of training with that as well. I went to a wellness coaching for a week by the most critically acclaimed wellness coach in the world, basically by the name of Peggy Schwarbrick. I've taken every course offered by NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. That includes being a state trainer, actually, for what they call peer-to-peer, which is someone with a mental illness helping others learn about their own mental illnesses. As you said, I attended the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey, which has now been incorporated into Rutgers program in psychosocial rehab. And I also my life experience taught me probably as much, specifically in the years now that I've been teaching the tools that helped me rise from, you know, what I would call the ashes or the bottom, you know, of the pit or the darkness to the light. And, you know, so I would say my experience and the actual teaching of these tools have helped me the most.
Oh, very good. Now let's talk a little bit about these 19 symptoms of low self-esteem. Do you know where you would like to start? I sent you a copy of it.
Yeah, I kind of would like to start on what really causes low self-esteem.
Okay.
Because, you know, I think what you read off are certainly a very complete list of some of the symptoms or criteria for low self-esteem. But I'd like to kind of talk, if I could today, about, you know, what causes it, and specifically, even more importantly, on how you can help yourself overcome these low self-esteems, or it could also be called, you know, negative thinking or negative thoughts. So let's try to go that route, and I could certainly, if the callers would like to call in, would love to answer their specific questions on, you know, your 19 lists. So first
exactly.
of all,
I agree with you. Why don't you discuss, you know, how it comes by that people end up with a very low self-esteem. In fact, they're walking on their self-esteem.
Right, exactly.
And what could we do to help them, and what should they be doing?
Okay, would love to. So first of all, I don't want to dismiss, you know, some of the scientific issues of what causes low self-esteem, meaning it could be a mental illness, you know, such as depression, could bring, you know, your mood so far down that you could experience low self-esteem from that. However, in that case, and I don't want to be, you know, say a proponent or a non-proponent of medication, But I would say that I do take medication, and that certainly has been important in my recovery. But there are lots of things that some people believe that you can do, to counter that, which we'll go into later. But I do not, there is that feasibility. But what I want to focus on are those that are creating self-esteem or low self-esteem based upon their previous experience. So
right.
Let's talk about that for a minute.
Yes.
And I want to refer to two, or specifically one author and book that basically took me out of the darkness by itself, and that's called The Four Agreements by Don Ruiz Miguel, or Don Miguel Ruiz. A lot of people
okay.
refer to him, and he likes to be referred to as Miguel. So
okay.
I will refer to that quite a bit in this conversation today, only because I've been educated. I've been teaching this for 10 years now. So I probably will refer back to that quite a bit. And mindfulness. And the author that I use there is Jon Kabat-Zinn. And I would refer your audience to read a book called Wherever You Go, There You Are. So I might, quote those people, quite a bit, but it's become part of my own, livelihood and thinking to overcome it. And because I do a group in the mental hospital of Denver Health, it's really, and I've been told by the doctors there, it's really cognitive thinking to help you through this low self-esteem. So let's talk first about what creates low self-esteem. Well,
okay.
It's like if you consider your brain a computer, which is very easy to do, I think, anyway, because we get all this input. We're basically a blank computer when we're born. But then people start putting stuff in our head. And what ends up happening, as he says, and also science says, is that we become domesticated animals, basically. We get rewarded and punished for our behavior. Now,
right.
The reward, a lot of time, what would you think a reward would come as for individuals? What's the reward we all seek most?
Money.
Money is certainly there, but love. We want
love.
As child, as children, and et cetera. And the punishment could be, I was grounded, or I was even slapped, or, some of us
right.
even get more abuse than that. But also, we get, ignorant, or we get, ignored. We get, from our peers, we get, get out of here. We get bullied. We get, there's all kinds of punishments that we can create, for ourselves in our mind. And what ends up happening is we develop this low self-esteem when we fail to meet our parental standards, right? Like, you're not good enough, Jeff. You didn't do this well. And then we start to judge ourselves based upon all of these judgments or standards that either our peers, our clergy, our parental, our parents, and our siblings give us. And then as soon as we get these judgments and we agree to them, then they become part of our beliefs, they become part of our thoughts, and most of all, they become part of our behavior, because we took in their judgment and we became the victim. And when you come from a place of victimization, you come and have to come from a place of negativity. And that's what starts the cycle. And if you continue to hold on to these negative beliefs and agreements that others have given you, what choice do you have but to follow them? So sometimes even negative beliefs about yourself are caused by experience later in life, not just, in your younger years, such as workplace bullying or even intimidation, obviously abusive relationships, persistent stress, a hardship? Or more importantly, what they're talking so much about today, Cheryl, is traumatic events that played out in your life that you don't even realize in your mind were actually traumatic. Now, personally, go ahead.
I'm understanding what you're saying, and I realize that a lot of this starts when they were children, when they are criticized by their parents or others, or even in school, like as early as elementary school. Do you know children can be very cruel?
Oh, absolutely. And that carries over. And it can become traumatic, and you don't even know it. If you're bullied or you're in a group and they throw you out and no one talks to you, or in my case, even more significant, when I was 19, my mother took her life. Well, I didn't realize the trauma that you know, really took on me, because back in those days, I mean, I'm 63 now in a few weeks, they didn't even know about trauma-informed care. But that's a very significant advancement in mental health because, you know, PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome, is, you know, something that we're talking about so much with the veterans. But you know what? Almost everyone has some form of trauma which can definitely lead to negative thinking.
Yeah. Women are supposedly having those feelings right after having a baby.
That's a whole different kind of depression, you know, that, certainly. And that again, when you postpartum, they call that depression.
Uh-huh.
When you go through that, and I obviously haven't been through that, but as I've read and studied, certainly, that's a chemical reaction, and that's what I kind of said at the beginning. Low self-esteem can come from a biological function of your body. You know, your neurons are not, you know, processing correctly. And that can, you know, start the whole process of, you know, depression, low self-esteem, and that's something to consider. Talk to doctors. Maybe change your diets, your vitamins. There's all kinds of theories. I've tried a few of them. What I found best, again, is to really study mindfulness and the Four Agreements to understand my thinking and to become consciously aware. That's really the key, Cheryl. When you begin this low self-esteem, any of the 19 things you pointed out, if you can become consciously aware in those moments, that's what you need to do to begin to transform the thinking. Obviously, if you're not consciously aware, you can't change anything. I don't care what it is.
You're going to go on and act on your thoughts.
Right, and then try to change them the best that you can through processing, through understanding your emotion first, right? Because you got to know what the emotion is. Is it, you know, anger? Is that the low self-esteem? Is it, again, victimization? Is it depression? What is it? And where are the thoughts coming from?
Right.
And why do I even believe, like in one of your, you know, statements, see if I could find them. Okay, so one of your statements is that you fear new experience and changes and not trusting yourself. Well, where does that trusting come from? Well, obviously, I think in this statement, most people would say it comes from fear. Fear is probably the most dangerous emotion that we can have because it just creates all negative thinking and et cetera. I'll give you an example, Cheryl, of myself. I have been on disability through my, you know, illness, and I wanted to start my own business, which is a speaker and educator, but I had an underlying fear that I would have a relapse based upon my last two psychotic breakdowns were trying to start new businesses. So the fear underlying was, I'm going to have another relapse. So it held me back. And until I could find where that fear was, first of all, identifying it, what was the, you know, thoughts behind it, and then to change my thinking, and I do that with three questions that I've learned. The first question I always ask when I have a negative thought or a low self-esteem thought, you could also say, is the statement true? So in my case, I'm asking myself, well, will I fail? Okay, is that true? Well, I don't, you know, who knows? That's kind of an unknown. But the second part of the first question is, where is it coming from? And that comes from fear, but it also comes from my psychiatrist, psychologist, the community, friends, and even family saying to me, Jeff, don't do this. You know, what if you go off Social Security? What if you go off of disability and you'll fail? And I began to believe the statements that actually were put into my brain. That's so key in understanding where the negative thoughts or low self-esteem comes from. The second question, which is an obvious one, is, are these negative thoughts moving me forward or are they holding me back? Well, almost every negative thought you can have will hold you back. And the most important question is, what can you do or what kind of thoughts can you have to help you move forward that are more realistic? Well, in my example, I thought, I have a much better network than I did before. I've seen a psychiatrist, so I'm on my medication. I'm married now to a very supportive wife. I have many more tools in place than I did before, and I'm much more aware of myself, so I decided to move on. So it's that kind of cognitive, they call it, thinking. There's also a thing called DBT, which is dialectical behavioral therapy, which is very popular with clinicians. And the most important element of that is mindfulness training. And that we'll get into in a little bit, but that is such an important part of helping people get into the present moment without judging themselves so that they can figure out all these things we discussed so far, which is your emotions, your thoughts, your beliefs, and your behavior. Because all four of those individually are the things that, you know, control our lives. So if you can just consciously change these, you can really live a life of joy, happiness, and purpose or love. So that's what I've really focused the last 10 years on in my lifetime.
Now, I've run into a large number of people, and we're finding that people are overly critical of others. They're constantly, you know, talking bad about others, gossiping, and, you know, all the way up into the church. Now, how do you deal with individuals that you know do these things and they're consistent with it? They're just negative all the time.
So I think what you're asking me is, how do I personally handle people that are speaking to me like that, or just how do I handle to try to change their behavior?
It is about everyone else. You hear them always. I'll give an example. When
sure.
I worked for the social services department, there was a lady that she talked, and she was saying all of these things around me, and she pretty much talked about everybody in the building. And then one day she asked me to go to lunch. And I said no, because the way I'm looking at it, she's talking about everybody else. I fail to conceive that she hasn't talked about me.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying.
So that's what I I didn't know how to, you know, say anything to her without her getting upset, and we'd been in a battle there. I just said no.
Right.
And right now, I wish I had of maybe, because I'm a counselor now, I wasn't then, but I wish I had of maybe sat down and talked to her about how I was feeling about the words that I've heard her speak over the months. And I didn't know how. I do now because I'm a minister. In fact, I can go to the Bible and show her errors of her ways. But a lot of people don't want to hear the Bible, so that's one of the reasons why I try to talk with people such as yourself to help me out.
Well, thank you. I have a couple thoughts about it. Don Miguel, and again, I teach this in a six-week class, so to go over it in a few minutes is really impossible, but I can certainly cover quickly the four agreements. And the first agreement is impeccable word, which really pertains to exactly what you're saying is that if you keep your word impeccable, which means without sin, and I know you know what that means, then that individual is continuously speaking with sin if he's spreading rumors and talking negatively about others. But the same could be said for individuals who speak negatively about themselves. They are speaking with sin. So for those that are spiritual in your audience, what they're also saying is in some ways they're looking up at their higher power or God or whoever they believe in to say, I think you made a mistake. How could you create me? Look at me. Now, okay. I can tell you, now again, back to the mindfulness definition of being in the moment without judgment or wherever you go, there you are. I've been in three mental hospitals, and in those moments, I thought, it was hell. What did I do? I'm insane. I'll never have a future. All the negative talks, you know, talking your you know, show is about and the low self-esteem. I'll never make it. All those things. But looking back on all of those three hospitalizations and all the negative things that have occurred to me in the moment, I thought now have become what I consider to be the best parts of my life because they propelled me to my life's purpose. So you can't judge those moments. Now, in dealing with individuals that speak negatively, et cetera, about others, you have a choice, I believe. My choice, personally, would be to walk away and tell that person, I do not allow myself or do not wish to be around people who speak negatively about others. It's not in my heart or my culture, my mindset. I'm not judging you. Continue to do what you do because I don't want to, you know, I can't change you. But I'm not going to, I don't want to listen because that's your choice as far as I'm concerned. That's my choice. Now, the other thing is, you know, I realize, too, that there are two, you know, illnesses or there is an illness and then there's a disorder. Mental illness is treatable through medication and through other, you know, works. Disorders, and it sounds to me, and I'm not going to, you know, tell it, but it sounds to me like this person has a personality disorder, you know, because whoever this is judging everyone, constantly projecting, you know, nothing's wrong with this individual, it's all about the other people. Some of these things you can't change, but you can make a choice. Don't be with them because for me, that's damaging. I want to be happy in my life. Now, I've lived a life for 50 some years or whatever it is in sadness and unconsciousness and, you know, being a bully, and, you know, being a person I don't look back on as being a, you know, positive influence in society. I don't want to live like that anymore. I want to live in joy and happiness and love. And from that perspective, I just would walk away. That's what I would, you know, give advice to others if they asked me. Does that make sense?
Yes. It makes a lot of sense. Now, I have a couple of other questions.
Sure.
I'm dealing with people that have a strong need for material possession or money. And it looks like people will do anything, you know, even take a life for a few dollars. And I know that it has to do with their self-esteem. And many of these people are on drugs, but they're on drugs because of that low self-esteem. I work with people in the community, and some of them drug addicts, dealers, and et cetera. I'm now learning how to try to get them from doing what they're doing. They respect me when I'm there, but as soon as my back is away from them, they go back to their behavior. And I haven't gotten to a point to where I could really help some of these people. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, again, I think it goes back to the individuals have to become aware that they are doing something that is inappropriate or something that could certainly contribute to moving forward in a very negative way, such as death or even jail sentences or, you know, severe punishment of some kind. They are unaware of their circumstances and of their decisions. They are motivated in most cases by, you know, peer pressure. They are motivated by society's image. A lot of gang members and et cetera, this is glorification of violence and money. So, and drug use. So it's really a very, very difficult challenge to change that form of thinking unless the individual accepts that he is or she is doing something that is wrong and wants to change their behavior. It's like an addict. You know, they won't change until they accept first that they're an addict and then want to change that attitude. You can't, I believe, I could never change anyone's behavior until they accept that, A, there's an issue, and B, that they want to. So it's a very tough thing. I mean, people struggle in the drug and alcohol counselors and rehabs and prisons and all that. I mean, this is a major challenge in our society. I mean, our jails are filled with people like this. You know, they can't consciously make that decision of accountability based upon these negative actions that you're talking about. You know, theft, robbery, drug use. You know, all these things are, you know, some cultures are very acceptable. In fact, they're idolized. So it's a tough, that's a tough row. Oh, definitely.
Well, it's sad because I'm working with a number of people. One of the individuals that I attempted to counsel was supposedly to be a so-called pimp. He was young. I guess he might have been in his latter 20s. But I got him to admit that he had very low mathematical skills, and that if your mathematical skills were higher, you would make more money. I got him to admit that he believed that, but I couldn't get him to study math. So maybe if his math skills improved, he'd be able to get a real job somewhere. But that's one of the things that I'm facing with people that are in the streets. Even though they'll admit to you that they know they have these problems, math, reading, or whatever, I've run into, I don't know how many people can't read. I don't understand that. They graduated from high school. Can't read. And so, therefore, we do have a school system here that must be failing. But I'm working with these individuals and trying to work with them using the Bible, because I'm a pastoral counselor as well as things in the earth realm that they're going to be challenged with. And this is not an easy task. It wasn't easy when I was working for Alameda County as a case manager or an employment counselor. I'm working with individuals that were receiving welfare and had at least one child. And my job was to get them to get a job. And if they needed training or whatever, refer them to those individuals. And it's just really sad that a lot of people didn't want to take advantage of what was being offered to them then. When I was on welfare, they did not have child care, bus fare, and payment for you to go to school. I had to do all of these things on my own. And I don't understand. When they throw something at you that will help you, somehow we have people that won't even take advantage of it. And I know it has something to do with their low self-esteem. I just don't know what to do.
Well, you know, what you're really dealing with, it seems to me from what you're saying, is what they call biased thinking. Mm-hmm. And that means that they have a way of thinking, and it is maintained and strengthened by this thinking, which basically means that they give weight to anything that is consistent with their beliefs, you know, and discount anything that is not. Now, their belief system that has been reinforced over and over again is that the only way, and I'm being very general here, but for them to get ahead is to follow a criminal path like their peers, you know, stealing, robberies, drug dealing. You know, this is how they've seen a lot of their, you know, peers gain financial wealth. Not by going the straight and narrow in their group, you know, because they probably don't watch that. They don't have friends like that. So that just gets reinforced. And that basically that is the bottom line that leads to the development for their rules for living, for their strategies for dealing with life on, you know, the assumption that that is their bottom line, which is true. And to change all that belief system, again, we go back to that belief system and behaviors and thoughts, you would have to basically let them get to know consciously that what they've been taught all these years is actually not true for the betterment of their life, to live a better life without stress and anxiety and, you know, unconscious living. So if that makes sense. Does that make sense to you?
I understand what you're saying. And I thought
it is difficult.
What I thought by changing up or teaching on the cycle of change that would help individuals.
Yeah, it can. It's difficult, though. You really have to build a trust, you know, with them, which I'm sure would be easy with you. But it's still, you know, you're really, you know, to break through and really think that you have a relationship and understand and that you're both seeing each other for what you are is really a monumental task.
Well, that's part of my assignment from the Lord, so I got to keep on going.
Right. I mean, you know, like the Lord says, or with everyone, you know, who is does the kind of work we do, if we could just change one life, that's incredible. That's
yes,
reward enough. So,
yes,
you know, that's all it
I
takes
want a little
is just changing one
that
life.
I know that I have been a part of a change of a number of people that were on welfare who understood what I was saying, went on and got jobs and kept those jobs. Because, see, that was another problem that that if we got them a job and show them how to get a job, they get the job. Job retaining was difficult for these individuals because they were used to being on welfare, used to not doing anything. And in the meantime, now we have even more of a homeless situation here in Alameda mm-hmm. County. Because the rules change. They're just not going to be sending you money. You can't just be having these babies thinking you're going to get extra money. They changed those rules. They changed the laws about fraud. We've already got a person that's going to do 20 years for food stamp fraud. I mean, it's and people that once their 18-year-old, the last child in the house, is discontinued, now you're not eligible to receive the money, and then you want to call me upset. You know, the only thing I say is, what have you been doing for 18 years?
Yeah.
You know, your last child became 18. You know, it's really rough, but I know if I keep meeting people such as yourself, I'll learn more and be able to help more people.
Well, I think the other thing to consider, and I understand what you're saying about people, you know, on food stamps, but it's also could also be discussed with people with mental illness that are on disability. How do we move them forward to get off of disability and become contributing members of society, you know, by making money, contributing, and doing something worthwhile? Because they limit them by putting parameters on how much money they can make and et cetera. And this is actually inhibiting people from moving forward. One of my big platforms is, why don't we pay like the people you're talking about, like people with mental illness or any kind of disability, a pay instead of just a handout, and get them to do some kind of work for society that would be helpful in anything that they could do, even if it's state-wide papers for the government.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up, because I know of one person that called in on my television show who's blind, who found out, because there's some new federal money for those that's receiving SSI and all that, that could start their own business.
Right.
He said he went down there to that office, and if he had not have been given the right person, he wouldn't have gotten the information that was needed for him to start his business, which number one is he had to have a business plan.
Right.
And
then
there's an organization that will help you with the business plan free. But if you don't reach the right person at these offices, and including the office I worked for in social services, they don't try to really help you.
Right.
I don't know if they think if everybody got a job, they wouldn't have a job. I don't know what the deal is. But everyone, all of those workers in that office should have known about that program for those that are receiving SSI to start a business or even get training so they could make some money. They do have programs such as that, but I think a lot of that money may be going back to the federal government, because if the money isn't used, it goes back.
Well, let me address that, because this is a personal topic for me. I got my education through, I think what you're talking about, I know for me it was called Department of Vocational Rehab, DVR. They paid in New Jersey when I was living there for my education at the university to get my psych social rehab certification. Now in Denver, where I'm living, they paid for exactly what you said. I got a professional guy who got me a business plan, and I started my business, jeffzinspeaker.com. So, yes, but that goes for everything. In my view, and I don't know this to be factual, only in my experience, the professionals that I worked with, meaning the psychiatrist, the psychologist, the therapist, never brought this up at all. Never brought up a lot of institutions or organizations, I should say, that help people with disability. In Denver, there's numerous ones that people never hear about, and opportunities that abound, you know, that no one hears about because they're not getting the information from the people they're meeting. And that's a sin, which, as you probably know as well, it begins with homelessness. When you're having no homes, no shelter, how are you going to get information about anything? You can't. So it's a difficult problem in this country for sure.
Yeah, and it's really sad. We're the most powerful country in the world, and it looks like we're the ones that's breeding all kinds of sickness, mental and physical sickness.
Well, we're certainly not trying to offset it. I mean, it's something like $113 billion are spent on pharmaceutical and post-treat, you know, after the attacks, treatment, but how much is spent on education and prevention is ridiculously small.
Yeah, because they end up addictive to prescription drugs.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
In fact, that's by working for social services and the working with the population that we were working with. It looks like whenever someone from social services went to the doctor, they wanted to feed them some kind of pills. And
Oh yeah.
Have people taking Prozac and all kind of stuff running around the building.
Yeah.
You know, because that looks like that they thought that that was the best way to treat individuals that are under stress working. For Alameda County and with the population that we're working with. It could become stressful if you allow it to be, but
again, I'm not saying that drugs are the answer or not, but for me, being bipolar or diagnosed with bipolar, I haven't had a relapse since I've stayed on my medication, but I'm not on the Prozac and the this. I'm on what they call a mood stabilizer. So I would say that, you know, for me has worked, but certainly there are numbers and numbers of people who, through healthy choices, have been able to, you know, get off medication. So I don't want to ever say to somebody, you know, take or not take, but I do know that people are misdiagnosed. I know that people are given drugs that, you know, are extremely difficult, like you had said, and you know, it's a sad thing. It really is when so much money is spent on the post crisis versus educating. I'll give you the perfect example, Cheryl. As my mother, as I told you, took her life. My dad was an addict. I came from an upper middle class family, and my first cousin on my other side took her life on my dad's side. Now, I should have been educated to know that I had a high propensity, meaning I had a high percentage of also having a breakdown because of, you know, having both parents on both sides having mental illness. And I might not have put myself into the perfect storm with a high-stress job in the fashion industry, doing drugs, and et cetera, and that was the perfect storm. But how many people ever, you know, were taught in schools and high schools and colleges that these are the percentages, folks. You know, mine might have been as high as 70% likelihood of having a breakdown or a mental illness. I wish I would have known. Maybe I could have prevented it. Or early intervention, that people were educated to enough. If you watch my documentary, which is on my website, Jeff Zinn, JeffZinnSpeaker.com. You will see under documentary a man who went from, you know, A-type businessman to hypomanic to mania to psychotic. somewhere in there, somebody should have been educated enough to know, Jeff, you're in trouble. You know, to
I agree with you. Do you know what? The people closest to you are the ones that can't see it, supposedly.
Or are afraid to stop it. Because they don't want to, you know.
Don't want to deal with it.
But the corporate...
But anyway, Jeff...
Go ahead. Yes, ma'am.
I am so glad to have had you as a guest today. I will be contacting you later because we're going to be talking about a lot of things that's dealing with your life skills and things. But in the meantime, what I want you to do is give everybody your information that you wish them to have.
Okay. First of all, they can go on my website. Again, it's Jeff, J-E-F-F, Zen, Z as in zebra, I, N as in Nancy, N as in Nancy, speaker.com, and they can contact me there. All my contact information is there. They can read some articles I've posted and et cetera. And they can call me at my phone, my business phone, which is 303-856-3553, and I'll call them back. And other than that, you know, I wish everyone, you know, obviously health and joy and happiness. And again, I would like to reiterate those two books I would suggest, which are The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz and Mindfulness by Jon Kabat-Zinn, Wherever You Go, There You Are. And stay well.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff. I will be in contact with you very soon.
Would love it. And thank you again for having me. And thanks for, you know, the radio station, BBS, to even having this opportunity for people to get on and share their stories and their education, et cetera. And it's a great opportunity. I appreciate it.
Yes, it's the best.
And I appreciate you for doing the work that you do. Seem very, you know.
I appreciate you doing the work that you're doing.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
And thank you.
Bye now.
Okay. I'm getting ready to round up and close. As you see, that was a very, very special guest. I will have him back on in the future. This is a person that I received a request from. BBS has a very supportive system. Every day I receive emails from individuals that requested to be on the show. And so what I'm trying to do now, they've sent me so many. I probably have 100 of them now. They've sent me so many. I'm trying to group them and have various people on at the same time. And we'll be covering subjects that is very important in the community and the world. Knowing is not enough, we must apply. Willing is not enough, we must do. Until we meet again, I love you.